Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Every cybersecurity source I have read over the last week has said it is just a completely bad idea to put all of this data from all 50 states into one place. That would be like a hacker's dream.
We're all interested in protecting the private information of our voters. This voter fraud commission or whatever out of the White House was a problem from the beginning, and so I'm very glad that Secretary Reagan decided to say no.
I probably won't even be able to work because I probably won't even be able to have a caregiver come in to get me up in the mornings. Because of my significant disability, I can't care for myself. So that'll probably end up putting me back in a nursing home.
This is typical of Arpaio. Arpaio keeps saying that it was not his fault, it was everybody else's fault. He blamed his attorney, he blamed his staff, he blamed everybody else. But fact of the matter is, the buck stops with him.
And here with us to discuss Secretary of State Michelle Reagan's decision not to share Arizona's voter information with President Trump's Election Integrity Commission, along with healthcare protests in Arizona and other items, are Joanna Allhands, AZ Central's digital opinions editor, and longtime pollster Mike O'Neill, host of the radio program The Think Tank. Guys, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Mike, let me get your perspective first on Secretary Reagan's decision. She had gotten some pressure. Her spokesperson, Matt Roberts, had said she'd received hundreds and hundreds of people concerned about this, emails, et cetera. Ultimately, her decision, does it matter?
I think it does. I think it was the right decision. Interesting, I think the objections probably came from two discrete places. Number one, you have kind of the libertarian conservatives don't give the government anything. Number two, I think you have more kind of the many Democrats who would look at that and say, wait a minute, this commission is investigating the wrong stuff. We have had voter suppression, making it difficult for millions of people to vote, throwing hundreds of thousands of people off the rolls. Whenever anybody has investigated people actually fraudulently voting on a national level of billions of votes cast, they find a handful. And usually what that is, somebody who lives in Minnesota and they're a snowbird in Arizona and they forgot that they voted there and then they voted here and it's six votes nationwide.
Joanna?
Yeah, you know, My initial reaction to the whole thing with Reagan was, well, duh, she should have known that people were going to be upset about all of this. I mean, we live in Arizona. We're kind of a hands-off kind of state. But the interesting thing, part of it is, you know, I think just kind of harkens back to where Reagan is in her office and how just really over her head she's been in that office for a very, very long time. And, you know, this is probably one of those places where she probably could have racked up some political points and she just knocked them all down.
Right. She indicated she was going one way and then sort of.
Yeah. And,
I shouldn't
say
flip-flop about politicians. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. We can't use the word flip-flop ever. But, she kind of did. I mean, you know, and she probably should have known. I mean, she should have known from the beginning that there was going to be some kind of big brouhaha about this and people were going to be up in arms about it. But she should have chosen one and stuck with it instead of just been like, I mean, I do like that she did listen, but, you know.
I want to defend flip-flopping.
it can be thinking,
somebody
actually, yes.
Comes out with an initial thought and it's wrong, I like the idea that they can feel safe to change their minds. I think too much is made over somebody changing their position. So as Emerson said, do I have the quote right? You know, consistency is the hobgoblin of small minds.
I do wonder, Mike, when it comes to that, though, not to send us too far down that road, would it have been wiser, though, based on what Joanna said, for Secretary Reagan to maybe consider it a little bit longer and get some good advice and then only come out with one answer, whatever it may have been?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, a lot of the so-called flip-flopping is people, issues evolve and over a period of years, changing your mind's a legit. Yeah, she should have paused a little bit on the front end and came out with a more considered opinion initially. Yes.
And she, the thing that's interesting is, you know, initially she had some valid points, you know, like some of this information we already put out to, and, you know, my colleague E.J. Montini had a piece about this morning is like, a lot of the information's already out there. Like, we're already giving this information to people. But I think the way that she did it, she, she really was just like, well, this is your fault. This is your fault. Like, you guys should know that this was a bad idea, you know. And there was a lot of really needless conflict there that I think really hurt her.
I did not read EJ's column yet, but I'm wondering, for some people, it's not just the information's out there, it's how could it be used? And this is a case when you have a federal commission like this, there's concern about that.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? I would have been okay with this if they were investigating a real problem and the feds came in with some sort of a system where it says, we're going to put this on a computer that is in no way connected to the internet, and we're going to have CIA-level security around it. And the reason they wanted all of these is so you could do matching across states and seeing whether the same people are popping up. But that is investing a massive effort with a lot of risk for what we already know is a non-existent problem.
Right, because there's already a
This has been investigated over and over, and the number of cases where somebody votes a second time is completely insignificant and always accidental. Because if you want to steal an election, you don't do it by an individual deciding they're going to vote twice. It has to be organized and systematic, and you go after the person who's organizing it, and you prosecute.
And Joanna, is the country stuck with the commission basically because even though President Trump is the president based on the Electoral College, he's still annoyed that somehow the popular vote didn't go his way? Because then when you're talking about millions and millions of votes that were incorrectly cast or falsely cast, even except that for the most conspiratorial person, that's not going to happen. It didn't happen.
No, I mean, and he's looking for votes for people that supposedly voted for Clinton, but he still won, and so who really cares? I mean, but I think at this point, so many states have pulled out of this commission. I don't see it going anywhere. And I mean, there's like I already said, there's already a commission somewhat similar that isn't quite as large as what President was trying to do that already has this information and has not really found
it. And look at the most suspicious person of all. Who is running this commission? Kris Kobach, who is the number one perpetrator of voter suppression in America. Now, most people don't know the name. He's a Secretary of State.
Well, they might
in
know him
Kansas.
Because of his connection to SB 1070.
And he's written a lot of that other legislation, but he is the most, you know, if you wanted a serious commission, you'd have some former presidents and some people who are completely above the fray. This is a partisan political actor on one side. Basically, he writes the legislation for the far right. And to have him running this commission, it just doesn't pass the sniff test.
And Mike, briefly on what Joanna had to say, with so many states, at least at this point, we're seeing 30 to 40 states. I'm not sure how official it is, but more than half have said they don't want to take part, at least to this extent. Do you think that ultimately sort of defangs this?
Well, it means they won't be able to do that sort of analysis. But as I said, that wasn't going to find it. You probably would have found a bunch of matches, you know, first name, last name. Maybe it's the same person. Maybe it isn't. That's the problem when they start striking names off the list. You know, it's how fuzzy a logic do you use? Does it have to be Michael O'Neill? Will we accept Mike O'Neill? What if the middle initial is on one, isn't on the other? Is it Smith or is it Smythe? And when you, for example, some years ago in Florida, what was outrageous, not only did they strike, you know, a lot of non-voters, but they used very fuzzy logic. In other words, they got names that were kind of like the names they should have, but in many cases weren't. And so it's a messy business. It's not something that's done with absolute provision. And I would maintain when you're doing something really strong, like throwing a name off the voter list, you should be absolutely positive. The benefit of the doubt should be in the direction of keeping the name on the list.
And Joanna, a couple of minutes before the break, and I want to start by talking about former Attorney General Tom Horn being let off the hook to some extent by the Cochise County attorney. But I have to read this quote. He'd been accused of collaborating with Kathleen Wynne of an independent group illegally during a campaign almost 7 years ago. Now, Cochise County Attorney Brian McIntyre took on the case following the Arizona Supreme Court's decision in May. And even though he ruled in Horn's favor, he still has a quote that says, Horn and Wynne certainly engaged in communication during a time frame which would cause any observer to cry foul. Does that still sound kind of odd that he determined that they didn't do anything wrong, but I could see where people would think they did?
Yeah. And, you know, it kind of just harkens back to the need, and we were talking about this, the need for campaign finance reform, which is not going to happen in Arizona because there is, like, no political will in anywhere just to do it. But, you know, we just if there was disclosure, if there was some way to know, you know, hey, these are the things that are happening, these are the communications, this is the money that's going here and there, that might clear up some of this ambiguity.
Well, General, how much of a watchdog do we need as the community, as the populace, to know what's going on? I mean, the thing that has always struck me, whatever side you fall on in terms of the political spectrum, why shouldn't we know more? And if people don't want to tell us more, shouldn't we be a little bit more suspicious of that? Like, what are you trying to hide? Even if you're not trying to hide something, it sure seems like you are.
Yeah. I mean, I know that the court has ruled that there are some First Amendment protections and that some people can be anonymous in the way that they donate. But, like, why do you want to be? If you really are interested in a candidate and you're interested in the cause, why wouldn't you say, like, I actually support mm-hmm. this?
Yeah. Mike, before the break, what
well,
do you say?
Well, I think the reason they want to be anonymous is somebody is supporting somebody who is in a position to deliver private benefit to them. And our problem is that the laws in this area, in our state, in most of the country, are grossly inadequate. And remember, when we talk disclosure, to be meaningful, that has to be disclosure of the original source, because these things all get whitewashed through an intermediate organization with a name like Citizens for Good Government. The fact that it went through that doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is who was the original source of the money. And right now, the laws do not permit us access to that.
And they're not going to. That's the sad thing is that, I mean, you had people like Michelle Reagan who were, you know, campaigning on, I'm going to fix dark money and I'm going to have disclosure. And she got into office and no.
And we'll talk more about this coming up with Joanna Allhands and Mike O'Neill. I'm Steve Goldstein. It is the News Cap on the show here on 91.5. Good morning. It's the show on KJZZ. We're in the midst of our Friday newscap segment with Mike O'Neill, host of the radio program The Think Tank, and Joanna Allhands, AZ Central's digital opinions editor. I want to finish up the Tom Horn discussion with this. He's been out of office for about 3 years. The investigation started nearly 7 years ago. Campaign finance reform, Joanna, as you said, very, very skeptical this could happen in Arizona. But how much do we care this late? Could this, I'm sure this won't, but could it in some sense rev up the voters to say, well, if he actually did something, why couldn't we have found out about it much sooner than this? Or should this have not been concluded much longer ago than it has?
Yeah, I would say, and I hate to be the, you know, Debbie Downer, but no. you know, I mean, people didn't care about this. And there have been other instances of questionable practices and spending. And I mean, all of that has happened, and if those things haven't raised the ire of people, this one is, especially with a guy who basically was forgettable and is out of office and has been and is not coming back to office.
I agree on that point. What's really a shame is that we've almost forgotten what the actual offense was. Mm-hmm. This woman, Catherine Wynn, was running an independent PAC in support of Tom Horn that had at least hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of dollars. It was basically the conduit for almost all of his campaign. And there were and you can do that under the law, but there's not supposed to be coordination. There's a whole flurry of phone calls between the two of them. That's what the county attorney referred to. And he said it's, you know, suspicious. The timing is suspicious as all get out. It certainly looks like he was flaunting the law. But he said, in a legal sense, it fell short of something that we could prosecute. And this was in contradiction to what the other county attorney that originally looked at it. So it's an ambiguous, it essentially says you almost need tape recordings or else you're not going to.
Yeah.
You're not going to get somebody on this. And the bottom line on it is that it weakens what is already an incredibly set of weak campaign finance laws.
And that's not going to change, according to Joanna. You agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Healthcare protests outside Senator Jeff Flake's office, in some cases inside Senator Flake's offices in Phoenix and Tucson, led to some arrests. Mike, I'm going to start with you on this one. Senator Flake's getting a lot of pressure. No. The Senator Dean Heller from Nevada is getting a lot of pressure. We're seeing some conservative Republicans saying they're not going to vote for this. How much pressure is there, first, from the local angle, on Senator Flake? He, to many folks, still seems like a strong candidate, because are the Democrats going to put someone up against him who is as strong as he is? But is this an issue that can hurt him? Can it cause him to try to moderate?
He is a strong candidate, but this is a visceral issue. The problem that the Republicans face is the CBO numbers that says throwing 23 million people off of health care. That's a biggie. They would like to run from that. I think at this point, the Republicans in Congress are looking for some way that they can bail out of this whole repeal Obamacare business without having anybody remember that the thing that they were obsessed with for 7 years, they tried to get away with. Now, the other thing about the protest is, you know, the fellow there went overboard and the people who sat in the office and got arrested. That was just bad tactics because those folks have the public on the side when they're, you know, concerned about 23 million people, you know, falling off of health care. But when you, you know, you sit in his office and you don't leave, at some point the action is obnoxious. They've already got the public on the side. The protest is good. The failing to leave the office, the one of the guys who lived, the threat of the one guy, obviously that's over the top and has nothing to do with legitimate protest, but it can undermine their efforts.
Mm-hmm. China?
And the thing that's most ridiculous about the protests is that Flake met with these guys. And, like, you know, they sent water and pizza out to them. And it's not like – and staffers were out there with them. So it's not like he's just, you know, holed up in his office or, you know, holed up in D.C. and is not listening. I mean, he's actually trying to – engage with these folks, and it's like no matter what he does, they're like, well, it's not good enough.
What's interesting, too, is, and we haven't heard this one in a while, but a few months ago we were hearing at various town halls that were some of these protesters being paid, which, of course, offended everyone, and it may have been an angle that was a red herring that was supposed to send people down a different path. So if we're talking about the issue, though, in a straight-up fashion, there is legitimate protest, as Mike said, and with Senator Flake talking to them, even because it's such an emotional, visceral issue, as Mike said, can people decide that more of them want to have these respectful conversations and just disagree about it? Or is it such an issue that for one side, for the Republicans, it was so political? And for the Democrats, though certainly most people are worried about people losing their health care, there is still that political element of trying to raise money behind this issue. How much does that complicate all this?
Oh, it probably does. And I mean, healthcare reform is so complex. And frankly, what the Republicans are trying to do, it doesn't do anything. They're not really fixing the system. And there are, you know, there are problems with Obamacare. I mean, the individual market is imploding in many places, including Arizona. And so there are issues, but they're not fixing those issues. They're just putting Band-Aids and doing things that really aren't going to make a whole lot of difference.
Actually, there's a helpful sign today. Mitch McConnell this morning said, if we aren't successful in repealing Obamacare, we should do something about shoring up the individual markets.
Yeah.
And that's exactly, of course, what they should do. That's exactly what would have been done with any other. When you have any major piece of legislation that is that huge, there's always some stuff you got to tweak to make it work. It was true for Medicare. It was true for Social Security. It was true for anything that big. You're going to not get something right. You go back and you tweak it. And helpful sign today is it looks like that's the direction it may be going in.
Yeah, I mean, take on if the Republicans are smart, they should take on some smaller things that they know are going to pass, make some progress, and then sort of set the stage for, okay, how do we move the system forward and really make some true changes that are going to make it better?
And they can even call it repealing Obamacare if they want. But as long as they leave the basic structure there or willing to replace it with something else. The problem was what they wanted to replace it was basically a core faction of the Republican Party doesn't think that the federal government should be in the business of providing health care. That's their problem.
Yeah. Joanna, my naive question of the day.
Uh-oh.
Why, after what we saw with Obamacare, Affordable Care Act passing with just Democratic votes, now we're seeing this. Why can't the parties work together on any of these things?
You know, we wrote an editorial basically saying that same thing. Like, can you guys get together and kind of work it out? Because that might work and actually help. It's just, I mean, look at politics today. You know, the sides are just so bent on their shtick, you know. And I mean, this was the huge campaign thing for Republicans. It's like, we're going to repeal this and we're going to make it better, but we have no plan. So, yeah, it's just they're so entrenched that they almost can't.
Mike, historical perspective, is this as partisan as we've seen, or if people went back to the late 60s, early 70s, it was just as bad, if not worse?
Oh, you'd have to go back almost 150. You know, you could probably go to the Civil War area to get this bad, where the parties are that completely bifurcated. I've seen lots of studies of that. There used to be a huge amount of overlap between – you had liberal Republicans like Chuck Percy and Rockefeller and a whole swath of people that basically got voted out of office because they got primaried in their own party. Why can't they work together? Because mostly they don't want it. And on the Democratic side, you know, they did originally in Obamacare. They allowed 200 amendments. They accepted a large number of them, and then they didn't get a single Republican vote. I think the Democratic lesson is if we face this again, we go it alone, because we did all sorts of concessions and we still didn't get a single vote.
Okay, now we're early on, and even though we're recording this, I'm not going to come back to it. But do you think, however this goes, whether there is a repeal replace or what you said about Mitch McConnell, Mike, is there, Joanna first, is there going to be heck to pay for a public radio word there, heck to pay for people on the Republican side, some of them, for how they vote on this?
I'm sure someone will try. I think it depends on what ultimately happens. What I think is going to happen is that the Senate bill as it is now is DOA. It's just done. There's too many people who have said, no, I'm not going to sign on to this. And so that is not going to come back to bite people. So going back to the protests against Jeff Flake, it's like, this isn't going to come back to bite him, because I would be surprised if they even end up taking a vote on it as it is now. That's me, and I could be totally wrong, but that's just my thought on it. Ultimately, yes, people are going to try to make hay because the system is not working for a lot of people. And so they're going to say, you know, oh, well, you are complicit in this, or you did this, or you did not do this. So it's going to come back to bite people in certain ways. But I think it really, what's before the Senate right now is not.
Mike, less than a minute. Consequences.
Way worse if they take a vote, because they will hang over that, okay? Even without a vote, however, enough of them have staked out position. There was a vote on the House thing, and there were positions staked out. And basically, the Democrats are in a position to argue with some credibility that the Republican majority had a design on removing health care from 23 million Americans. That's why right now, now it's a ways out, but the polls show an 8% Democratic margin in the potential House vote. That is, anything over 5 and the Democrats take over the House. So there's real jeopardy there.
And we'll see how gerrymandering could affect that. Longtime pollster Mike O'Neill, he's host of the radio program The Think Tank, and Joanna Allhands is AZ Central's digital opinions editor. Guys, thanks for joining us on the Newscap.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.